What I said is there will be some big shifts, some big global events, but I don't know exactly when it will happen, but be prepared for it when it happens.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
What does a futurist do on a day-to-day basis? On this episode, we talked to noted futurist Christian Kroma on how he became known as a futurist, how to recognize patterns and cycles to better predict the future, how to effectively forecast using pattern recognition, whether or not it's better to be a generalist or a specialist, and what's the ideal time horizon to employ when making a prediction. And we even talk about black swan events that throw off all of your previous estimates. I think you're going to really enjoy this one, so let's jump right in. Christian, welcome to Future Proof.
Thank you for having me.
So the thing that I'd like to ask everybody at the beginning is, who are you? What do you do on a day-to-day basis? I think people are always curious about what does a futurist speaker author do? What does their day-to-day entail?
Yeah, my day-to-day work was speaking before the corona crisis hits the event market. So I was flying all over the world, giving keynotes, workshops about future of all kind of industries, from finance to agriculture to healthcare. I'm working on a new movie, and I'm involved in a couple of startups. Yeah, that's what I did on a day-to-day basis. But now during the COVID crisis, I have lots of time because my entire diary is cleared up. So I'm working on some new stuff like e-learning courses and stuff. Yeah, a lot of time right now.
Which I think can be, it's a blessing and a curse, as they say, because everybody like us likes to stay busy. And inevitably, you start to innovate and find new things to do, which is a benefit in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a time to reflect, to look inside and see what you really care about, what you really have fun in doing. And also discover new business models for myself. So the virtual presentation space is growing fast right now, giving virtual keynotes, not with Zoom, but in a virtual avatar-like presence. So I'm discovering some new possibilities to do my work from home and giving keynotes all over the world in a virtual way. I think it's good to have a time like this to contemplate, to reflect, and to see what's more possible.
Yeah, I like that positivity. I think that when people think about futurism and being a futurist, you know, obviously that's the thing that you're billed at as. And how does one become a futurist? Tell us a little bit about your path towards getting that moniker, getting that designation.
Yeah, I was also always interested in the future, in new technologies, new trends. I was also interested in patterns in nature, patterns in behavior, patterns in our society. And about 5-6 years ago, I owned a company. I founded that company in the year 2000. That company became bigger over time. And what I really liked to do was giving inspirational sessions with management teams or CEOs. And when I sold that company, that was the thing that I want to remain doing. So giving inspirational sessions. So I thought, okay, what would be a good job to do that? And yeah, then you start to give keynotes, and before you know it, you're a well-known futurist giving keynotes all over the world. So you grow into it. And I think it starts with your interest in the future of society, of technology, of organizations, and start to share your insights and your knowledge. And after a while, yeah, you become a well-known speaker, and then things go by itself.
One thing that I always find very interesting, though, is that there are some people who are such charismatic speakers, and they make bold predictions about where we're going to be, and they touch the audience in a certain way, and as a result, the audience buys into it and never necessarily challenges them when they have a very poor track record of actually getting things to convert, getting things to, like, predicting something, and then it actually happens. And then I see people who they have a pretty good track record, but they're very even keel. They're not bombastic or audacious in the way that they speak. What's the better way to go? How do you balance those two things, trying to be right, but also trying to be convincing and dynamic in that regard?
Yeah. Well, the first one, trying to be right, I base my work on nature, on biology. So I studied for the last 5 or 10 years the patterns that behave or that come up in nature. And I think those patterns are a good way to predict where technology is going. So what I basically do is look at how biology and living cells build organisms and how we human beings use technology within organizations. And basically, we are following the same pattern. So I fall back on nature because nature has a track record of hundreds of millions of years. And for the other part, how to be engaging or interactive with the audience is try to tell stories and use visual advanced graphics so that people are buying into your story by seeing it, simply by convincing them in a graphic way. And what I also do is tell a very personal story. I became basically a futurist by doing a discovery. My daughter was very ill, and there were no doctors that can help her. So she got a terminal diagnosis, and I was forced to look for new ways to basically to save her life. And during this search, I started looking a different way towards health. And then I found out that our body is also an organization or a community or a society of cells that work together in harmony. And basically, that's when I discovered the link between nature and technology, biology and technology. And that's what I tell the people. And they are emotionally involved. And so I try to do both things. So the predictions that I do in my book, are most of them are correct. I think many will be in the future. And that's simply because I base my predictions on how nature behaves. And that's very predictable. That's how I do it. But I think there are many different kind of speakers that use different techniques. And you have to follow a technique that suits yourself, that fits with who you are.
And it's so true. It's interesting because I think that type of power of persuasion, when it falls into the wrong hands, it can be dangerous. But I think when you have somebody who's honestly just trying to look at patterns, like you're saying, and also follow history and how human behavior has worked. I was reading up for the example on the 1918 Spanish influenza and how people reacted to that, because everybody thinks what's happening now is totally novel and new. But the reality is, if you study history, then you start to notice certain patterns in terms of how people react to things. And as a result, it's perfect examples. I think people saying now it's the death of the city. We are all going to live on farms and we're never going to. I say Philadelphia, San Francisco, these major cities were impacted so drastically. And these are still cities 100 years later. So last I checked, I don't live on a farm. I live in Manhattan.
Yeah. I think nature is cyclic, and our society as well. And that's also where my waves of change, my waves of disruption are all about. These are cycles who repeat over a certain time. And this cycle speed increases, and that's becoming exponentially faster and faster. And that's, I think, if you start to look at the world in that way, in a more holistic way, that everything repeats itself on a bigger scale, in a more global scale, faster, then you'd start to see the world from a different perspective. And we can learn a lot from the history of mankind and the history of nature. And that's what I try to tell in my keynotes and my book and my movie, is that we don't have to look into the future. We have to look into the past. And if we really understand what happened previously, then we can augment that into the future. And then we have a pretty good pattern of which we can follow. I think it's easier than predicting based on all kind of trends. It's studying history and go from that.
So I have a question then based off of that. I think I know now how you'll answer, because I've always wondered is if it's better to be a generalist as a futurist, or is it better to pick one narrow topic and avoid everything else? It sounds like what you're saying is if you can do pattern recognition, you can go very broad and still be pretty effective in terms of forecasting what will happen.
Yeah, absolutely. If you really understand the patterns that create our future, as you will, or why specific technologies emerge from our society, then you can present for many different audiences. So I do keynotes for the financial industry, the accounting industry, healthcare, agriculture, mobility, logistics, because the pattern is everywhere exactly the same. But I think the future is a very wide area. So I think we also need specialists that pick a specific topic like AI or augmented reality or all these specific technologies, blockchain, and focus on that area, because all these topics are massive on its own. So yes, you can be a generalist, but I think in the end, we need specific specialists to fill out the gaps and be more specific.
And I think also, just to add on to that, I feel somebody of your stature, if you're speaking to other people who are, you know, point solutions, who know a lot about virtual reality or machine learning, and maybe more than you and I, you can speak to them and you can absorb a little bit of knowledge by speaking to them, and then getting a sense of this particular thing that I'm predicting is actually not 1 year out, it's 3 years out. And that's based off of the limitations of the technology. And I've just spoken to somebody who's more of a subject matter expert than me. So it's not like we can absorb other people's information, assimilate it, and use it to become better, I feel like, on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, absolutely. I use it also to fill in the gaps, because You cover a wide area when you speak, and based on the feedback from specific audiences, which are in the healthcare specialists or in every other industry, you fill in the gaps and you create a more specific story for that industry. So basically, I think, yeah, it's good to have constant feedback loop with the audience and with all kind of experts in the area and level with them and see if your story is still correct and still on date. Yeah, I think it's a continuous evolving thing.
So as a futurist, how do you get better on an ongoing basis? Because I'm sure you're, even if people don't necessarily calculate your winning percentage when they're hiring you and they're working with you, I'm sure you want to always get better. So what are some of the tricks that you do to, you know, challenge your assumptions or to read more, anything that allows you to improve?
First of all, to have conversations with people in the audience afterwards and in roundtable sessions, for example, with CEOs, which are, I think, they have good information and they have good industry insights. So on specific topics, you can have good conversations. But I especially like conversations with people with opposite perspectives. So they challenge your way of thinking. They challenge the sources and the patterns that you rely on. And I think that makes my work better, because if you can speak to scientists or people which are have a different view on what you're telling, yeah, you challenge those both views and then you can become better. So I really like having conversations like that with people in specific topics, in specific industries, who can challenge your mindset, your way of thinking. And I think that helps me to become more accurate and to challenge my own biases and way of seeing things.
So it's interesting that you say about, you know, correcting for your own biases, because I'm wondering how, when somebody's trying to forecast the future, how do they correct for those biases that are innate? How do you separate out what you want to happen versus what you actually, like what you think will actually occur? A perfect example I think of with 2020 is I enjoy going to conferences and meeting people. And I've had people say to me that virtual reality technologies will never stop us from seeing each other in person. And I say, never is a pretty long, it's a pretty bold assertion. So I say, the virtual technologies will get better and they will start to replace a little bit the face-to-face interactions that we used to have, and maybe not entirely, but they will. And it's not something I want to happen, but I'm reading the tea leaves and I'm looking at the data and I can see that future happening in our lifetime for sure. So anyway, that's just one example, but how do you correct your biases, what you want to happen versus what you think might actually happen?
Yeah, I'm an optimist, so I want to move towards a world where we live in harmony. And sometimes I'm too optimistic for on the short term. And as we see today, what's happening in our world, it's a lot of misery and bad things are happening right now. So what I try to do is to challenge my thinking on a daily basis by reading books from experts more in a technical area to see where specific technologies are right now, and also to look at the bad side of technologies, because I talk about technology, how they can help humanity become more united to empower individuals. But the same technology can also be used to divide people and to disempower people and to enslave them. And that's exactly what people see right now happening in Facebook and Google and all these platforms. So I also try to see the turn side of the coin and see the bad things that are happening and let them also challenge my thinking. Because if you look back in history, you always see that technology is first used by the ego to control people, to gain more power. And afterwards, it's used by the ecosystem where it benefits everyone. And I try to incorporate those patterns as well. So yes, there are very promising technologies like VR. And yes, they will replace many day-to-day interactions with people. And eventually, if they become holographic, and I believe that every technology will go there eventually, we won't see the difference between a real person interacting with a real person and with a holographic person. So I also think that will, yeah, if you look more to these technologies, what they can do, it will balance your insights, the bad side and the good side as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a very interesting that you mentioned being an optimist, because I think when you compare that with the idea of pattern recognition in, you know, history, obviously, there's a lot of reasons not to be an optimist, but you do need to have that hope. And I think that hope does allow us to do some things that we wouldn't be able to do otherwise. I know that you challenge organizations to do things that they wouldn't be able to do otherwise and to think like a surfer so they can surf the next great wave of technological change. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah, but what I basically tried to do is to explain the wave pattern. My model is based on 7 disruptive waves. We are now entering the 6th wave of AI, and these waves correlate with the biological evolutions of organisms, which also happened in 7 big stages. So I tried to explain those patterns so that they can incorporate those patterns, understand those patterns, and that they can see why the next wave of technology is building and when this wave has enough momentum to jump on. And I use these waves as an example so they can understand, just like a surfer, you have to wait for the exact moment to jump on the wave and you have to be in the right place at the right time if you want to leverage the power of that wave. So I use that metaphor to make it understandable. So I try to make my audience also a futurist by understanding the patterns beneath every trend that we see, and so that they can incorporate those trends for themselves and become their own futurist in their own niche. And if they really understand that, then my job is completed with that organization, because they don't need me anymore. And that's basically what I'm trying to do, is to help people to understand their environment, how it behaves, how it changes, and how that will affect their organization, their business model, their job, or their skills or mindset. And that's basically how I try to inspire people, help them to make them future-proof by thinking differently about what's happening around them and to understand it at a root cause, why it's happening. And if you can understand that, then it's easier to adapt to it and catch the next wave of technology, because you know exactly when to jump on it and leverage that technology like AI or AR or VR, these kind of technologies.
I think that's such a great analogy. I really do. Because I think that when somebody's trying to anticipate the future, how far ahead should one ideally look? Because I guess you can get it reasonably accurate if you're only looking one day ahead, but that's not that useful, nor is it useful if I can tell you exactly what's going to happen 10 years from now, because I might advise you, but you're not going to be in the same organization 10 years from now to take advantage of that information. So what's the time horizon that people should be trying to look ahead and still be reasonably confident that they can get something right to some extent?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. But I think they only need to be prepared for the next wave. They need to be positioned right to leverage the power of the next wave. So I think 1 to 3 years. And further than that, it's almost impossible to look at a detailed level. I think it's more important that they understand the bigger picture and why things are happening than that they see exactly when it will happen. What I try to teach them or to inspire them is to recognize the pattern, to recognize the swelling of the wave, and to find the right moment to jump on that wave. So basically, it's more like if you are a surfer, you have to be in the moment, in the now. And I think that's the most important for organizations, that they are fully aware in the moment, and they develop the senses to see what's happening around them. And I think that's more important, so you can stay in the flow. If you anticipate too much on what's going to happen and you're 1 degree off, then you miss it. So it's much more important to become aware of the moment and try to develop senses to find out when things will happen. And that can only be done by seeing the big picture and understanding how waves are swelling and where they swell and how they swell and how big they get, more of these kind of things. So I advise people to trust their intuition on that, based on knowing how the sea and the waves are behaving in a certain time. So that's how I do it. But I think 1 or 3 years ahead, it's on a technology perspective, it's already pretty far right now.
And then even that, I think what's interesting is accounting for black swan events. I think in a lot of places, you can make a prediction in February, let's say, of 2020, and then by March, it was rubbish. It was just completely useless. And is there any way at all for people to assume that a black swan event will happen every X number of years and will cause every prediction to be off by a certain percentage? Or do you just say, listen, I didn't get this right because I didn't predict this, so that I need to reforecast everything, but it's okay because basically everybody that I compete against has to do the same thing. What's the best way to approach that?
I predicted something like COVID because it also happened in the previous 7 waves in biology. So I predicted that our society would come to a complete standstill. But I wasn't aware that there was a virus or a quarantine or whatever. That's now happening. And I think it's a sequence of events that will happen that will help us to get back to nature, because we are disaligned with nature, I think, more than we can ever could do on every level, on a personal level, on an organizational level, on a society level. And we need some crises to become aware, to create consciousness that we turned or took the wrong turn. and that we do go back to nature and align with nature again. So what I said is there will be some big shifts, some big global events, but I don't know exactly when it will happen, but be prepared for it when it happens. Become digital so you can move quicker on the web and evolve quicker. Reduce your number of assets in the physical world, so become more weightless when you're in a digital world, all these kind of things. But I think, yeah, that will happen so now and then. And in the near text, and the next 10 years, I think we will see a couple of these events because we have, I think we'll have multiple dimensional crises on a monetary level, on a healthcare level, on a educational level. All these things are basically out of, yeah, at the end of the stretch that they're capable of having. Yeah, I think an advice could be there will be more crises like this and it will be more severe. So be prepared and do your best to be...
What a great happy note. I'm glad we're not ending on that note because I think that is... I think you're probably right. And I think that we often inevitably, while we try to innovate, we tend to create the next drama. We sometimes create more problems than we're solving, but then that gives us another problem to solve. You could argue that there are changes in the ecological world that have happened that as a result have led to bats being displaced, which then probably caused COVID. So there's all these theories about how it's our fault in some ways. Yeah. But it's, I wanted to just switch gears a little bit, and just because I know I have to let you go soon, but I find your work so fascinating. And you mentioned that you're working on a few interesting projects that you have more time to devote yourself to due to 2020. And I think one of them was swarm-based. What can you tell us about that?
Just as you mentioned, every new wave, every new disruptive wave with new technology solves a problem, but it creates problems on a higher level. So we need to shift our consciousness to solve that problem. I think one of the first waves was the agricultural revolution. So we developed government structures, centralized power structures. And we have now, I think, we find out the side effects or the collateral damage of these systems because they are inherently slow. They're not in the interest of the population, most of them. So I think a solution for that is create a new kind of organization, which is distributed, decentralized. And if you look at nature, until a number of 50 individuals with wolves or apes, they use a hierarchical structure. And above 50, nature uses swarm organizations with bees and birds and fishes and stuff. And these swarms are able to create much more complex organizations. And today, with the growing exponential technologies and global connectivity on a global scale, we have organizations which are becoming way more complex than we used to work with. And I think the hierarchical structures are not working anymore. And we see this in this crisis, but I think in the next crisis, we will see this even more. So we need a new kind of organizational structure. And basically, I'm working with a couple of people within a swarm to create a swarm platform so people can collaborate with each other using AI technologies and all things like emotional intelligence to connect on a global scale with people and to work like a swarm in real time and work much more efficiently. And I think the interesting thing with a swarm is there is no CEO. There is no management team. It's an autonomous working system, an holographic system, which is very agile, which can adapt to environmental changes instantly. And if you see those perhaps movies from National Geographic with these swarms of fish, if there's a predator, they instantly react to it. So I think with these new kind of organizational structures, we will be able to scale exponentially fast. So we don't need management layers anymore and marketing departments, sales departments. So it's a growing swarm of individuals which are autonomous. And I think that's the future of organizations. And therefore, we are now laying the foundations for such an organization. And that's what I'm working on right now. And it's very interesting. And we have to study nature much more to really understand how these swarms work because they're quite complex.
I find that really interesting. And I think it's a direction that I haven't seen a lot of people pursue. So I'm going to be following that very closely. Christian, I think that this is really helpful. I'm going to drop a link to your book and your work in the show notes because I think other people will really benefit from this.
You're welcome. It was nice to be on your show.
Thanks again to Christian for making the time. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to associate producers Jason Stack and Vic Bortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.